Our values drive us, our emotions run us. And for some of us, it feels like we're riding the waves of our emotions and not sure what to do with them. Now, sometimes we, you know, have things like anxiety, for instance. Wouldn't it be nice to know how to change that and not be caught up in it? Wouldn't it be nice to know how to deal with something like depression and do something about that, to have other states that you could go into that allow you to reflect on what you need to reflect on, put things in perspective?
The Biological Farming Roundtable podcast helps farmers explore innovative, low-input, regenerative and profitable farming systems. The Biological Farming Roundtable is sponsored by Nutrisoil, an award-winning biological liquid fertiliser made from a big worm farm. Nutrisoil's purpose is to empower farmers to produce life-enriching food. Hello, I'm Nicola Maddick from Nutrisoil.
And I'm David Hardwick, agroecologist at Soil Land Food.
And this is the Biological Farming Roundtable podcast. David, science has conditioned us for years in how to think. I think more than 300 years ago when the scientific revolution really began. It's this mechanistic controlling view. We're taught in farming, feed the plant the nutrients it needs, spray the weeds that compete with the plant, and if pests or diseases come, kill it. But now what we're seeing is we're moving into a more integrative view. So conserving nature, realizing that nature doesn't really work in a linear way. Farmers are now finding themselves in this era of change. We've got a different climate, we've got different soils, different social and political times, and consumers are being more interested in how their food is grown.
Yeah, that's right, Nicola. And I guess that scientific worldview that's emerged in the modern Western world really dominates everything. But I think we're sort of seeing that, especially in agriculture and food systems, we're running up against problems that it can't help solve. You know, that things are complex, things are systems, and that linear reductionist approach just really doesn't work at the end of the day. It starts to cause a lot of problems. And unless it's part of a wider, more holistic ecological view that you take to things, we're really not really going to solve the problems of our times.
Yeah.
So it's a big challenge in agriculture. And I guess thinking differently is really what we're talking about today.
That's right. And I think we're having this pendulum change where we're going to these soil health days and we're finding that we have to work more with nature, and then we go back and we work with our agronomist and we've got this farm plan that we have to follow. So if we can get some sort of support in how we think and maybe our values and goals, that might help us in this changing environment.
Yeah, really, it does all come back to the way you think and your own perspective on things. And that's probably part of that change that every farmer goes through and grazier goes through if they're trying to take a new path or a more regenerative path. It starts inside, in between your ears. How do you see things differently? And what are your values? And do you need to challenge them? And that can be tough. And can require a fair bit of soul searching and really evaluating why you're doing things the way you're doing. Yeah, and not everyone likes to get to that level, but the reality is that you have to get to that level if you really want to do things differently.
That's right. And our values, if we're working against our values and we don't know it, sometimes we're in this pain that we don't realise that what that actually is. So if we don't do this deep work with what our values are and how we think and what our perceptions are, we're not going to be living or farming the best that we possibly could be.
And not everything's about money. It's also about that inner contentment, and how can you have that inner contentment and satisfaction in life if you're not sort of aligned to what you believe in and clear in those goals and values as well. Yeah, yeah.
Absolutely. Yep. So let's find out how we can do this.
Yeah, let's peel back and look inside this old deep question here, and I guess we've got a great guest to help us with that today.
Today we're here with Rod Fraser from Business Growth Strategies. Business Growth Strategies is about designing your business for purpose and profitability. Rod works with his partner Ellen Martin, and they take a holistic approach to helping you build something really special in your business. They work with personal coaching with the business owner or the farm owner or manager. Building the right team. They work with the team, and then they work on the whole business strategy as a whole. So welcome, Rod.
Thanks, Nicola, and thanks, David.
No worries.
Really nice to be here.
Thanks for helping us explore this topic about values, thoughts, and the way we see the world in agriculture and how that influences change.
It's my pleasure. It makes a huge difference when you're able to follow your own inner compass and make decisions according to the things that are really important to you and what you love.
So, Rod, how can understanding how our mind works help us make good system decisions or farming decisions in a world beset by really rapid change?
Well, it's like, you know, we come into the world and we're given this operating system and no one bothered to give us the manual. And it's really nice when someone takes you through, well, how does the human mind, how does the human heart work together for you to create the outcomes that you have in your life? And so really, it can change the game big time.
It's pretty complex, the human mind and our emotions and our whole state of being, isn't it? So it's about taking the time to pull that apart and really understand it so you can use it in a better way. Would that be a fair comment, Rod?
Yes, it is. And, you know, sometimes we talk about the subconscious, we talk about different parts of the mind. I like to think of it as, well, there's the bit you're conscious of and the bit you're not. And, you know, if you're out in the middle of a football field and it was pitch black, it was the middle of the night and you had a torch and shone it on the ground, that's your conscious mind. And the rest of it around you is what we call the unconscious. And that's where a lot of stuff's happening. And you, when you're shown, you do have the ability to tap into that. And it really helps.
Yeah, I want to talk about that subconscious mind. But first, David mentioned something before about a state. What is a state?
So a state's a combination of things. So think about it this way. You have thoughts, beliefs, and, you know, we don't think in language. You think in pictures, sounds, feelings, smells and tastes, and then we might translate that into language. And so then you combine that with the feelings that you have, the emotional state, if you like. So the mental state, the emotional state, which is supported by a simple thing called breathing. And if you wanted to change your state, change your breathing. It's the easiest way to do it. Or move your body.
So take a deep breath, chill out, relax, yeah. And that helps reset the brain's state and helps you to make a better decision in that moment.
Yeah, or go for a walk or stand up, start moving, doing something different. Now, if you want a longer change, then obviously we've got to do a bit more work, but it's not with the conscious mind we need to work. It's with the unconscious mind.
So what is this unconscious mind?
So the unconscious mind is, you know, you think about, well, who runs your heart? Well, you don't think every second, pump, 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 pump. Some part of you is running that. Some part of you is doing all of the chemical changes, the hormonal changes and everything in your body that you need. Sitting in the background, you know, how do you know to fall asleep when you fall asleep? How do you know to wake up? All of that is coming from somewhere. Where are all your memories stored? Where are all your experiences? You know, we're time travelers. We're able to think back into the past. We can be in the present. We can think into the future. Where does all that come from?
So it's a deeper layer of the mind, if you like,
yeah.
That we can tap into to help us in our daily decisions and our strategic decisions.
That's right.
When we're farming or running any other business.
Yeah. And you know, quite often we think that, you know, our nice little saying, our values drive us, our emotions run us. And for some of us, it feels like we're riding the waves of our emotions and not sure what to do with them. Now, sometimes we, you know, have things like anxiety, for instance. Well, you know, wouldn't it be nice to know how to change that and not be caught up in it? Wouldn't it be nice to know how to deal with something like depression and do something about that, to have other states that you could go into that allow you to reflect on what you need to reflect on, put things in perspective?
So it's really about managing those, having those emotions, but being able to manage them, not let them manage you, I guess, Rod, would that be a fair comment?
Yeah, really well said.
And I guess coming back to regenerative agriculture, which is obviously what we're all on about here in the podcast, is, you know, a lot of people are looking to change and they're reflecting on why they're doing what they're doing and how they're doing farming and grazing. And does it, do the values that they feel they have match what they're actually doing? And if not, can they stop, reflect and reset themselves?
If you're not living according to what's truly important to you, what you love, and it comes out in our language, you know, I love to, I choose to, I desire to. Once we move into the area of I should or I must or I have to or I've got to, That's not your values. It's somebody else's. It could be society, it could be your community.
Something being imposed on you.
Yes, very much. It's like, I don't know about you, but when someone says I should do something, my back arcs up. I don't like it very much. But when I'm saying, expressing for myself that it's something I really love to do, like I love coaching people, it just flows. It's really easy to do. When I'm able to do something I love, I can manage my emotional states much better. When I'm doing something that's against my will, if you like, managing your own emotions is much harder. And in fact, we tend to be more volatile with our emotions when it's not ours.
Well, how do you work with someone to find their values?
Well, let's start with a very simple question, because values are contextual. They're not, they can be across your life. And there could be areas of your life that are really important to you. But let's say it's the farm. Let's say, well, what's important in farming for you? And what's important in that? And what else? And what else? And what else? Each answer that you come up with, it'll be something that just pops into your mind. It could be a picture, a sound, it could be internal dialogue, that you get an answer. It comes from somewhere. That's part of you speaking to you. The beautiful thing about those answers is they're like doorways that you can walk through and start to explore and find out, well, what is it that truly runs me? Why do I farm? Well, yes, there could be I do it because my parents before me did it, my parents before that. You know, in our family, I'm like the seventh generation who have had farms before me. I became a city slicker, if you like, but I still have family on the farm. Why do they keep doing it? Well, I suspect with some of them it's because the family did. But then if you dig a little bit deeper and ask them, but what's important in it for you?
So it's really, we have a trick we use in group facilitation called the four whys or the five whys exercise, where you ask people why that, why you're justifying each answer you give yourself till you dig right down to the deeper value or justification of why you're there. You know, people say lifestyle, we're in agriculture for the lifestyle, but there's obviously deeper layers than that really are important to people.
Yeah, and it could be lifestyle gives you freedom and flexibility. So you think about, why do people go into business for themselves in the first place? Freedom's usually there of some sort. The dilemma for most people who go into any sort of business is then they discover that the person they used to work for that they thought was an idiot, now they've become the person. And it's not so easy. Business is complex and it's difficult and it's not for the faint-hearted. And you need courage.
And you layer on top of that agricultural businesses, which have those extra couple of dimensions of climate uncertainty, and that adds an extra layer of complexity to the business management. Yeah,
and commodity markets, for instance, where you have no control over the price, all you can control is how you grow it and then who you sell it to.
Well, I think this is the core of what's happening in farming. Farmers are feeling like they're working against their values because they might have gone into it because they love the land or because they like the flexibility of time. And now they're backed into this corner where they're having to do things to their land to make profit, to keep them just paying their bills. And they're working around the clock. All these things that they thought that they were going to get from working in the farm that's going to be working with their values, this changing time of climate and social and commodity, it's not how it was.
They're not getting what they thought they could achieve, yeah. And I guess the other thing about that industrial approach is the actual work you do on a farm, you know, when it's very mechanised and simplistic and repetitive, the work, as Ray Zamora, the cane farmer, says, you know, it can be brain dead type of work. So it doesn't have a lot of fulfillment to you intellectually too, you know, like the challenges of farming differently are much more satisfying because, you know, you're having to solve problems and deal with complexity, and that can be really satisfying once you make that change.
Yeah, absolutely. That farm plan where at a certain time you spray, you know, even if the bug isn't there, you spray.
Yeah.
Where with regenerative agriculture, you're creating nutrients from what you've got on your land and you're seeing
how you're adapting. It's complex. You're dealing with things on the fly, but it's rewarding at the end of the day because it's a different way of dealing with things. Mm.
So imagine that you could step back and start asking those questions, what's really important in farming for you? What do you want to get out of this? What do you want specifically? And what else? And what else? And what else? And what's the real challenge here for you? And what else? And start to tease it apart, slow it down. And then we can go to a question that I love that I put to most business people, but how could we? And we keep asking that question, but how could we? It could be outside of our knowledge of what we know. And so, you know, rather than trying to make wholesale changes, transition, test and measure, work out little bit by little bit how you can make the move. This goes to any business now, particularly small and medium-sized businesses. I love working with small because we can pivot, you know. We can do a lot more. We can move a lot faster in certain ways. But obviously with agriculture, you know, there is a time factor.
Yeah, I mean, that key point of trialing and testing things and not just jumping in wholesale, although there is a time sometimes for radical change, but often you've got to trial things because it's a risky enterprise. You're doing change and you might end up down the wrong way road and have to come back. So, you know, you've always got to be testing things before you jump in too far.
Yeah, and you know, it's not just farming where the change has happened. You know, most business environments now have changed so radically in the last 5 years that every business on the planet literally has to keep rethinking things because business is dynamic. It's not static. You know, it's like not like going to the accountant and looking at once a quarter or once a year. Cash flow happens all the time or not. Profit and profitability happen all the time. And so how do you create something that's sustainable? And then once it's stable, how do you grow it? Sometimes you have to shrink to grow. You have to consolidate. And so then thinking through, how do we do it on our own? Well, guess what? In business and in life, it's a team sport. You can't do it on your own, not anymore. You need other people around you.
And I guess, Nicola, that's why we're saying, you know, regenerative and alternative farming networks springing up with farmers helping farmers and giving each other support in trying to manage this change and take new ways forward. Yeah, because people can't do it on their own, and that's the really important aspect of being part of a social group that support each other.
Yeah. Absolutely, and I think that's why we're here doing this podcast. How can we support farmers to get through this stage of change?
So one of the big lessons, I guess, Rod, then is make sure you're part of a network that's supportive and that helps you learn and adapt as you go forward.
And be with people who can ask you really great questions, who understand not just people but also business, so you can fully explore, well, where are you now? Where do you want to get to? What are you trying to achieve? What's possible? You can explore all those things over time. But first of all, get your mindset right. Get your heart right.
And you've got to be open to new ways.
Yes.
If you're not open to learning, well, you're not going to take a step forward, as another old friend of mine said. You know, you can learn how to water ski and stand up, but if you ask the boat to slow back down, well, you're just going to go back in the water. You've got to be willing to commit. Yeah. So I guess the opposing force here is really the fact that industrial, scientific or reductionist approach gives you a recipe. It gives you a recipe, and it's a safe, supposedly bulletproof recipe for success in agriculture or farm business. And I think a lot of people realise that recipes don't work in any business, including agriculture, but it is a safe, easy thing to do, follow a recipe, isn't it? So it gives you a sort of false sense of security.
Absolutely. Yeah. So how do we break through that fear?
Yeah. How do we throw the recipe book out?
That's right, yeah.
Any tips, Rod?
Well, you know, it used to be you could just open a business or go onto a farm and start doing business and there'd be someone there to buy your product or your service, whatever it was. That's changed. You know, the whole supply-driven world has dried up because there's so much supply of everything. And so now it's flipped 180 degrees, if you like, to being about demand. And so how good are you at identifying the demand that you want to serve? Who's the customer that you really want to serve and you want to deal with? Well, if you know what's in their heart and mind and their values and what drives them and how they make decisions and what sort of experience they want to have, then we can take the guesswork out of your business by getting close to them, getting intimate with them and co-creating with them in your business. But if you're still trying to just perfect your supply, whether it be cattle, sheep, whether it be crops or whatever it is, and then trying to find whoever you want to sell it to, that's a commodity market and it's driven purely by price And there's been a huge dislocation between price and the cost of producing it.
Yeah, those terms of trade have squeezed tightly in the last 40 years, that's for sure. And I think that's pretty common knowledge. So I guess that this is another aspect of this old school thinking, really, is that, you know, if you just make a product and someone will buy it, you just got to get over that mentality. And I think that's at an industry level too. Like if you look at sugarcane, for example, in the sugar industry, it's very much a commodity type industry. And yet, you know, consumers are wanting alternative, more healthy sugar options, bioplastics. There's all of these new aspects for demand for new types of things for the new world. And I guess the sugar industry has to think differently if it wants to meet those demands and survive and thrive.
Yeah, and you know, let's face it, it's not easy work to discover who that customer is. It's not easy to discover how they think and what's in their heart and what their values are. It's messy work. But it's incredibly satisfying when you discover who they are. So for Nutrasoil, they've discovered who their core customer is. They know the kind of farmer that they want to work. You know, someone who really wants to learn, someone who truly values health and the health of their soils and the health of the food and fiber that they produce, because they care, you know, not only about the land and the soil and what they produce, they also care about their own health, the health of their family, the health of their community, and the health of the consumer. And so their values, you know, health is a really important value. And so it's really easy to talk about stuff when you value it.
Yeah, the challenge then is to build the business that allows you to meet those values while still make a dollar. And yeah, I guess that's the challenge that guys changing to regenerative agriculture have, is they want to live these different values and restructure their business in a more value-based way, but they've still got to make a dollar. They're still constrained by their environment and often by opposition from either people in their community or someone else that disagrees with them. Yeah,
and every business has constraints. And it comes back to that question of, but how could we? What's possible? Let's go and find out. Who else has done something? It's like, well, that's interesting. How do they do that? Let's go and find out.
So second golden rule that seems to be coming out here, that first one was, I've forgotten the first one, but this second one is about being open to new ideas and to just brainstorming new ways of doing things, not saying not that's not possible and locking things away, saying, look, everything's on the table, let's explore all these options.
Yeah. Mm.
So I think in farming families, what we come across is that one person wants to change, and the dad might not want to change, or the mum might not want to change, or even the kids. So how does a family, I mean, Nutrasoil is a family, we're a family business.
Absolutely.
And we had big struggles at the start to get our values in line.
It wasn't because of you, was it?
Let's not talk about that, David. How do we work with a family business when everyone's values aren't in line? What do you do, Rod?
And so first of all, you've got to discover what each other's values are. So then you can start talking and not either or. And then roll it up. What's something that we all agree on? What's something that we hold to be true amongst us? And start with that and then build out from that. So, you know, just ask that question of each of you. What's important to you in, you know, farming or in our family, in our relationships with each other? It's a great question to start with. And so take the time to really pay attention to each other, to listen to each other. All of you will have wisdom. And then it's just working out what is the collective wisdom. And look, there'll be things you disagree on. And it's like, okay, let's pick it apart and find out what's real and what's fantasy here, unreal.
And where the common ground is.
Always.
With the common ground, and yeah, that's a positive first step.
Yeah. And you'll all have different language around how you express the same thing. You might be saying the same thing but just using different words, and you have meaning attached to your words. And until you come to that common place of understanding, oh, that's what you're trying to say, and get that common understanding with each other. So why are we all here? What do we want to achieve here? Why do we farm? Why do we do it as a family?
Sounds like a little bit like a succession planning sort of strategy too, isn't it, Nicola? Like, where you've really got to get to this deep level of the why, what's driving you, what are your personal values, and then what are your family values? And if you're going to jump into something like changing your whole farm business, you've all got to be in on the team, otherwise it probably won't succeed to the extent that you want it to.
Absolutely. Yeah. I'm interested, Rod, the way that you work is that you work with the business owner or the business manager. That's your first starting point.
Yeah.
How do you use that person or get that person to then get everyone working in a value system?
So we start with something nice and light. So first of all, we just have a chat and find out, well, where are you at now and where do you want to get to and what are some of the challenges? And start to just tease it apart and work out, well, what's going on here? Most importantly, I want to know, who are you? Because I want to know what drives you. I want to know how you put your energy into the world. Are you what we call an extrovert who makes decisions by, you know, going out and talking to lots of people? Or are you an introvert who goes and gathers information and your energy tends to go in rather than out? Or are you someone who is driven by lots of ideas? Or do you have a great sense of timing? You're more grounded. You know, how do you operate in the world? Well, if you're someone who goes to ideas, if I was going to send you an email, if I didn't capture you with the subject line, you wouldn't even open it. And if I put more than a paragraph in there with a specific action, you'll never read it. Whereas if you're a full-blown introvert like I am, I want detail. I want to know the full story. Now, if there's not a long story, then just tell me what you need to tell me. And it could be we need to get together and chat. But knowing how you roll and what works for you and what doesn't, because what we want to find out is what's your natural flow and what's truly driving you and what's important to you and what are you trying to achieve?
Yeah, but, well, these things aren't important, mate. It's just about going out there and milking the cows. Why do you have to worry about all this people stuff? We've just got to – that's the other perspective, isn't it? And
absolutely,
that's where agriculture's ended up, is it the people and what you think and what you want and your understanding and all that's pretty much irrelevant because you've got the recipe and that'll get your business over the line.
Which is great. And you could have people who love farming, but guess what? You've got a business too.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it's not just one or the other. It's an and going on here. And so there's certain thinking that really is needed for you to be able to build a business that's sustainable, let alone growing, just sustainable in today's dynamic environment. And so, like it or not, if you own or run the farm, you're in charge and you're the one who needs to do regular strategic thinking to drive this thing
forward. So you've really got to do the hard yards on the team, on the people in the business and on the value stuff, as well as the hard yards out on the paddock and the machinery. If you don't do both, well, you're not really going to have success. And I think that's pretty similar, Nicola, to, you know, good succession planning is the families that succeed in it put that hard yards into the soft stuff, in the mental stuff.
Very much. You know, it's like this this thing about hiring for skills. Well, guess what? You hire a whole person and you get all of their emotions and you get their life story coming with them. And if you're going to hire someone, you want to get a right fit. You want someone with a value set and with beliefs that align with your business and with your team, who's going to slot into the team in such a way that you're not hiring individuals, you're hiring a team. You want the team to function at their best, to be on fire. To be driving the business with you, not just you sort of dragging a bunch of people along who do stuff.
Yeah, I've just finished reading a book called The Intelligence Trap, and they talk exactly about that, about how, you know, if you're hiring people just on their technical skills, the team often fails, whereas if you hire someone on their ability to work with other people or their social intelligence, those type of businesses and teams usually are much more high performing and get better outcomes.
They'll always outperform
a group of tech heads that can't work together.
A very linear-driven type business, you know. It's, where really what you're hiring is one-people armies and they can't succeed. It's not possible for them. So how do you get people into a rhythm that they work together in such a way that they're regularly stepping back and going, okay, what's working and what's not? What do we need to do that's different?
I'm still intrigued by you working with this leader and the example that you gave before about the dairy farmer saying, that's not how we work, we don't need that, we've got this plan. This is what I'm seeing when I'm going out onto farms is the dad or the granddad, they've been in this prescription for so long, they've become so inflexible, they kind of know it, they just don't know how to get out of that inflexibility.
How to make that first step to
That's
change.
That's right,
and
they
up.
Want yeah. to, yeah. but it's not, they're just yeah. so...
Yeah, the pattern's been built into them over many years of surviving, and they've, you know, they've brought up their family through that pattern, so, you know, they've survived through droughts and floods, and so they know it's
minimal.
Worked in the past, yeah but it may not be the right strategy now, but how do they break out of that? And that's the big challenge, I guess, in change, in extension and rural change management. We have this term called the triggering event. You know, often people, especially farmers, go through an event that triggers change, and it's usually a major catastrophe or a health issue or a disaster or a natural disaster. It could be a whole range of things, but and it might have been, there might have been a lot of things building up over many years in that person's life, but there's usually something that triggers, you know, the epiphany moment happens in some way, and it's obviously different for everyone, but but you don't want to trigger people too much, or they might have a shock and it might be too much for them. So how do you do that?
There is a lovely pattern that we teach people called outcome, intention, consequences.
Oh, you better slow down and do that one again.
So what I mean by an outcome is, what do you want? What's the goal? What do you want to achieve here specifically? And then what do you want that for? Which is a bit like purpose in a way. It's like, what's your intention for that? And so, you know, when you start to unpack that and go, okay, well, if I achieve this particular outcome, this goal, you know, what I want to do with this farm, what would be the costs and consequences of getting there? Now, that's great if that all sort of lines up and feels right for you, but then let's go to some other questions. First of all, is this achievable? Is it realistic in today's market and ever-changing market? And that's a way for us to dispel any potential fantasies. Something that is not possible in today's marketplace. So it means we can start to explore things. Do you have influence over this? Well, in a lot of cases, no. Well, what bit do you have influence over? You know, do you have the resources to achieve this particular outcome? Maybe yes, maybe no. You know, do you know specifically what you want? Well, let's keep going until you do. Let's really unpack the consequences big time.
So we're trying to, obviously there's emotion involved, and as you know, Rod, a lot of people don't always make decision on rationality alone.
No,
a lot of people make decision on emotion and values more than rationality, and there's no wrong or right in any of that. It's just how people think and decide. But I guess we're at the point where when people want to go through that thinking process of making change, what you're describing is, you know, clarify those goals and where you want to go to, and then throw some cold buckets of water of reality over the top of that. You know, okay, is the climate, you know, is the markets, is this thing realistic, to help you think through the real, how realistic it is to get what you think you want.
Yeah, and sometimes we just go to the numbers.
Yeah.
And so I did this with a farmer last week. Sat down with him and for quite some time, like, he loves farming. He doesn't really love the business bit. He does it because he has to. And like most farmers, he doesn't have enough people working with him. He can't afford them. You know, he's been feeding every day for the last couple of years. Water's been a real issue. So costs have skyrocketed, had to take out more loans. Well, there's only so much road at the end of the day. And so we just looked at, okay, could you ever get out of debt? And we just started to unpack it. And what does the current business look like? How much money do you need to at least be break even plus 10%? So you've got your head above water. What is the capacity of this particular farm? What could it be? Well, is that enough? Well, no, never get out of debt in this case. It's like, okay, well, let's look at some opportunities for how could you farm without the debt? And we start to ask the question, but how could we? And we think we've come up with a formula. Now we're going to go out and test it.
Yeah. But you have to go through that process of really thinking hard and reflecting on why you're doing what you're doing. And at some point that's quite challenging, because obviously that farmer is, you know, been willing to face the situation and have a good heart, cold hard look at it. But unless you do that, you can never really start to do a major change in your situation, really.
And then we can ask the values questions again, you know, what's really important in this for you? And it's like, well, you know, part of that's not realistic. So let's go to realistic and now ask the question, what's important in that? And start to explore, well, are your values going to be fulfilled still? You know, yes, you know, you might not be able to be on your father's farm, but we can still farm. We can still own the stock. You know, so you can still achieve most of things. Well, guess what? You could also get a whole bunch of things that you've had to sacrifice that are truly important to you, like relationship, you know, like being involved in exciting projects because you just don't have time.
I'd like to move on now to our thought processes, Rod. They say that our mind can't distinguish a thought from a fact. Could you expand on that for us?
Yeah, so it's like, you know, when we see something in the world as opposed to seeing it in our mind doesn't necessarily perceive the difference. And all it means is that, you know, for most people we know something's external to us and something's internal to us. But for the mind, if it's well imagined, it's just as real for you. It has just as much an impact on your emotions, on your state, on your thinking as something that you perceive out in the world. Now, we could be standing beside each other and we both see something happen. But what you saw and what I saw is completely different. Because according to my values and my identity and my beliefs and the way I see the world and the meaning I attach to it will be different to yours. So we could be reporting something to the police about what we saw and they'd be looking at both of us and going, were you in the same place at the same time?
Well, I guess that gets even more tricky when you talk about science and abstract concepts and facts about how nature works or how soils work or how plants grow and all of that. And a lot of that's abstract or things that you can't see in front of you on a day-to-day basis. And yet, so you can get these different entrenched views of what's factual and what's not fact. And something might be a partial perspective and someone else has a different part of the perspective, but they both can't see the full picture. You know, and that's often what happens, you know, when we get this regenerative agriculture butting up against scientific ag is going back to what's a fact and what's truth.
Absolutely.
And are we all seeing the whole picture or are we all just seeing parts of the elephant?
Yeah. Like a scientist will actually, you know, they'll do their studies and then they'll look at the numbers and then they'll be able to say, well, this is a fact. And then if you zoom out, like which Rod keeps teaching me to zoom out.
The broader context of
things.
Is
that really a fact?
Yeah, yeah.
Is that really how it's going to happen in the paddock?
Yeah.
If you've done it in this one paddock with this, the history of that paddock, will that happen in another paddock,
yeah,
in another climate?
Yeah. So I guess the, you know, good agricultural science is really, you know, when it's done well, it takes into account that contextual differences. And if it doesn't, then it's usually poor science, I guess, in any field. But I guess, yeah, this is the challenge, is how to zoom in and out. And that's really, for me, is a key part of ecological thinking, is what we call thinking at different scales and being able to think from big scale to small scale and jump between the two. And it's a key foundational skill in ecological thinking. If you talk to ecologists, scales, you know, 101 ecology. But it's a really important skill that I've observed that farmers that start to do more regenerative or ecologically based farming, they understand scale and can use it in their thinking, like you've described.
Does that work in time frames as well?
It's time as well as physical scale, yeah, you know, because often, you know, one rainfall event in 10 years can do a lot of damage or a lot of good in a landscape. It's just that one severe storm, but you've got to be able to think at that scale to appreciate how important that rainfall event is. So it's all of those new thinking skills that really people need to try to develop, I guess, some of which really come out of ecology. Yeah.
And you also asked before some of the work that I do with a business owner. We teach their unconscious mind some of these patterns of how to step back from themselves, how to zoom out, how to zoom in, how to stand in someone else's shoes and look back at yourself from their perspective. That's healthy. Also from your own perspective, or step outside of both of you and observe both of you. They're very useful things to be able to do. And so in linguistics and neurosciences, you know, we call that perceptual positions. And so it's something that all geniuses do, and we all have the capability to be a genius in the things that we love, where we have real flow, where it's just easy for us to do those sort of things. And so that's some of the work that we, you know, with business owners, like, well, do you have good sound strategic thinking patterns? to be able to look at things. Like, can you tell me specifically what you want and what you want that for? And have you thought about the costs and consequences of that? Have you unpacked it?
So it's a little bit like sort of identifying your strengths and weaknesses around all this stuff too, Rod, I guess, so that you can, if you need help or expertise or bounce some ideas off someone else that can help you with that. I guess the other thing too is when you work with other farmers or people in a community and in a social sort of learning approach, those people can give you another perspective. And if you listen to that perspective, well, that's sort of like, instead of, if you're not good at zooming out, well, just listen to your neighbour because they can see you from outside and give you their two bobs that might help you in your decisions.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. And, you know, step back and contemplate it and also have the discernment about what works for you and what doesn't. That's a nice thing about having your own internal compass. It's like, okay, yeah, that's an interesting idea, but it's not something that I'd like to entertain. You know, work that stuff out too.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think, you know, asking your neighbour isn't the best thing sometimes.
Yeah. So depends on the neighbour.
That's right. So I think that's why we're trying to find these communities of like-minded people so we can bounce these things off each other and have the ability for someone else to look in on us.
Yeah.
And it's like you said before about facts. It's like, well, all facts have assumptions and theories sitting behind them, and they're only as good as the assumptions and the theories that sit behind them until someone disproves it. And so, you know, we often hear in today's media, the science is settled. Well, no, science is a question. It's not an answer. It's always been a question. And so we're always searching, you know, trial and error and, you know, testing and measuring all the time.
Observation, yeah.
What works in this particular place at this particular time might not work over the hill.
And in fact, that's what we're seeing really in regenerative agriculture, is that these new areas of knowledge that no one really knew about 30, 40, 50 years ago are being revealed to us through new science. And I guess the challenge is to bring that stuff into daily thinking around how you manage landscapes and paddocks and soils and plants, because the kind of mainstream industrial approach, some of that stuff really gets kept out, because if you bring that in, you're challenging all these assumptions that have held up that model for the last 50 years since the Second World War.
Yeah, we absolutely need to keep our minds open.
Yeah, no, I'm sure for the next millennia we'll be breaking a lot of paradigms and that learning's going on. So I guess that's the big challenge here, isn't it, is to have an open mind, to be learning all the time, to be an open learning person. If you want to make change, if you want to engage in new ways of doing agriculture, you've just got to switch that mind and open it up and be, not be crazy, but be willing to really listen to things that are right outside your box and be aware of what your box is, so you know when you're blocking things from being let in.
Yeah, self-awareness is the starting point. And so if you know yourself and you know that you need to work with your ability to think clearly and to act well in the world according to what's important to you, and based on what you are trying to achieve, and have really sound thinking around that with good prioritized actions. We can all have to-do lists until the cows come home, truly. We can easily make ourselves very busy, particularly people in a farming environment. There's always something to do, but what's most important right now? What's most important today, this week, this month, that we need to achieve? And how can we? How can we do that even though other things need to be done so that we can move forward? So being able to strategically think things through is very, very useful.
And being really aware of yourself and what your values are. Nicola, it sounds like we all should sit down now and do a bit of meditation. What do you reckon?
I love meditation, David.
I don't know if it'll work on the podcast, though.
I can lead. You ready? No. Yeah. Rod, I think we've talked about farming and business and how values and being able to understand your state and possibly control your state works. What about in the families and in your personal relationships? I mean, money isn't everything. I think we've all got a bit of an idea that money isn't everything. Happiness is a core need for humans. How does this impact our happiness?
Well, I think, again, ask that question, what's important to you in the family environment? What's important to each of you in that family? Ask the question of each other and take the time to listen and understand each other and talk in each other's language. So there's an and going on. Whenever you talk in someone's values language, you'll get a much better response than imposing yours. It just makes sense, right? And so doing those sort of things. Now, you know, if money was really important to you, you'd be building wealth. Sometimes people who say they want to have money spend like the wealthy, which is quite different to what the wealthy do.
Wealthy people just tend to build wealth. Yeah,
very much.
Yeah,
and they're also, you know, could be quite strategic about how they spend money and for what purpose. At the end of the day, values drive us in everything that we do. Now, it could be that you have a value that you are going to be honest in your dealings and you want to build wealth. So you drive a hard bargain. And there are other people who will build wealth and do not value honesty and do it in a totally different way. And so this is how values can come together and will drive how you behave in the world. Behavior is the ultimate evidence of your values. Now, your emotions are evidence of whether you're living according to your values. And so if you're very low or very high, it could be a clue. Then in your language, you'll be giving clues away too. You'll also give clues away about, well, what do you create space for and what don't you? What do you create time for and what don't you? What gives you energy or energizes you and what doesn't? What will you find money for no matter what, as opposed to you can never find the money for? All evidence of what your values are.
And I guess that's really the regenerative agriculture movement, Nicola, is it's trying to find these values or express these values apart from money and just profit in agriculture, you know, the family values and looking after the planet and the environmental values, all of those other values, which somehow have been a bit lost in modern agriculture. But there's a lot of people very keen to have them in the mix, front and centre. And I think maybe that's what's underpinning a lot of the regenerative agriculture community, and that's been expressed now through in various ways.
Absolutely, yeah. Look, they say the best way to predict your future is to create it. Rod, what can farmers get help to access, or how can they get these type of tools? Can they work with you? Where other places can they go?
Look, they can certainly contact me through Nutrasoil, or directly, and we can make those details available. Happy to talk to anyone, really. And
just not after 10 o'clock at night.
Yeah, no, that's past my bedtime. You know, happy to talk to anyone and help them move forward in some way. So whether we work together on the future or not is not important. It's more about, well, let's have a chat and find out what's going on for you, where you're at now and where you're trying to get to. And I could point you in all sorts of directions. It could be that some people say, oh, I want to learn more about these values. Well, if you're dispersed, well, maybe we do something online. And so do a bit of a workshop online so you can start to discover your values. Well, if there's enough interest for that, be delighted to do that.
There might be some books too that you can recommend that we can put up on the podcast website.
Very much.
Yeah. Some people like to read a book. Well, might be some other podcasts, not quite as good as ours, but you never
There's
know.
There's lots of fabulous stuff out there. There really is. When you start to look for it and pay attention to it, there's lots of great material.
You've got some great blogs on your website I was reading earlier as well.
Yeah, so, you know, I've written those over a few years. And they're just my experiences. I've been in business since I was 18. Bought my first business when I was 18 years old, a milk run of all things. And I just love business, and you know, it's not easy. It's a tough slog, and we all have our highs and lows. And you know, sometimes it takes us a while to work out that we need help, and we need to ask for it. That's all. Most people will help in some way or another if you just ask.
No, great. It's been great to investigate the deep stuff today, Nicola, on the podcast. It's really important to all of us, and especially whether we're farming or doing anything else, just being aware of our values and why we're doing what we're doing, what makes us happy. I mean, otherwise, what are we here for?
Absolutely. So important. And thanks very much, Rod. We've really enjoyed your input.
Pleasure.
Please follow the Biological Farming Roundtable podcast. Share it with your friends and networks. I'm Nicola Maddick and I work at Nutrasoil, a liquid biological fertiliser made from a big worm farm whose purpose is to empower farmers to produce life-enriching food.